Chapter 12. Montague Street Bus Stop, Bloomsbury, London, England. July 5th, 2017. 3:42 a.m. Alistair parked the SUV as he was instructed, just in front of a bus stop where a homeless woman swaddled in tattered brown rags and a blanket was sleeping, her breathing laboured. They were close to their hotel, just a few metres away from the brightly lit Greek temple-inspired columns and stone steps of the main south entrance to the British Museum. Alistair held a sacred text of the Wheel Andrillic close to his chest, like a newborn child as they exited. Shigidi circled the vehicle and looked round to make sure they were not being watched. Nothing caught his eye but the empty roads, stolid walls, and ugly red advertising along the glass barriers of the bus stop sitting area. A solitary streetlight illuminated the reflective white marks and lettering on the ground. They were still checked into their hotel, but Shigidi had a feeling that they would not be checking out, even though he would have appreciated the chance to have one more cup of their excellent coffee. He could use the stimulation. He took off his jacket, draping it over the passenger seat through the window, and rolled up his shirt sleeves. It was time to get to work. Norma walked up to him, her red-soled high heels unusually silent against the stone sidewalk, using spirit particles to pad her footsteps. She stopped about an embrace away from him. She stared at the streetlight until it flared bright orange, started to blink, and then finally burned out under her concentrated spirit particle pressure, leaving the three of them in a pool of near darkness. Another overt display of her skill, or perhaps just practice. He couldn't tell, but he could see from the twinkle in her eye that she was enjoying herself, or at least pretending to. She walked past him, brushing his arm lightly, and spoke directly to Alistair. "I'll take care of the CCTV cameras. You know what to do, so let's do it. We don't have much time." Alistair nodded, set the Wheel Andrillic down on the driver's seat, and reached through the open door into the back seat of the vehicle to retrieve a black leather-bound briefcase. As Norma stood still, faint trails of orange spiraling out of her body, seeking the city's ubiquitous electronic eyes. He quickly spun the combination locks on either side of the briefcase to the 3-digit code and pulled out what he needed, a wood-carved mask painted forest green with holes for mouth and eyes cut out under gold-painted eyebrows. From the chin of the mask extended a solid black 3-inch beard with a series of rings painted in gold around it. When he put it on, Norma covered her mouth with her hands, trying to keep back a chuckle. She looked like she'd been sprayed with gold dust. "A mask of Osiris?" she asked, barely keeping her composure. "Really?" "Yes, really," Alistair countered. "Do you want me to access London's spirit side or not?" "You magicians are funny. But yeah, whatever works for you," Norma said, giving a conciliatory shrug of the shoulders as she snickered, then turned back to Shigidi. "At least this doesn't require sex magic, does it? That would be really awkward." Shigidi managed to choke his laugh back to little more than a smile. "We are about to risk our lives, and she's still amusing herself." Alistair ignored their mockery, took out his smartphone and extracted its stylus with a gentle push. He turned up the screen brightness and used the stylus to draw out a shape in swift, smooth strokes. He chanted words that sounded like a mishmash of Latin, Arabic, and Hebrew to Shigidi's untrained ears. And as Alistair chanted, the white light from the phone screen began to pulse. Once it had established a sort of rhythm, he moved so quickly that Shigidi didn't see what he had drawn on the screen. He placed the phone on the asphalt road and covered it with the bulky Wheel Andrillic. The book also began to glow and pulse with a low white light of its own, as if it had become translucent, and, after a few pulses, a ring of light rapidly irised out from its centre before contracting back into the shape of an eye. The eye of light blinked at them twice, then stared. "Okay, Operation complete. This isn't exactly the best tension site, but I found a good few sockets nearby for anchoring the corporeal and spirit particles. I think it will hold. Alistair took off the mask and cleared his throat. Give me your phone. Shigiri pulled his phone out of his left pocket, unlocked it with his fingerprint, and passed it to Alistair, staring him down. He still half expected him to try something that would earn him a punch in the face. In some ways, magicians were a lot like babalawos. They were humans who had established connections to spirit entities and learned how to manipulate spirit particles. The key difference was, babalawos knew that they served those spirits. Magicians sought to have dominion over them. I don't trust him. Alistair simply took the phone, opened the voice recorder app, and spoke in the same bizarre macaronic mishmash language he'd used earlier, which Shigiri still couldn't understand, except for the phrase abyssus abyssum invocat, which he'd heard before when one of his regular customers at the Orisha Spirit Company had been converted to Christianity. Deep calls onto the deep. Whatever that means. Now the two devices are tethered to the same portal through a secure back channel, Alistair announced when he was done. Call my number once you're in a position to establish the remote connection, and I will perform the operation to pull you spirit side. He passed the phone back to Shigiri. Just make sure you're holding on to each other when you make the call. I need direct physical contact to be able to pull both of you in with one operation, and I doubt we will have time to do it twice. Thank you, Alistair, Noma said. A deal is a deal, love, he responded, seeing Shigiri still watched him closely. I'm going in now. Not sure how long it will take you to get what you need, but we won't have much time before sunrise, when the wheel and Drillik is summoned back to the temple, breaking the connection. So I'll grab us a ride, spirit side, just in case. This is a heist, after all, so no harm in having a getaway driver, is there? I suppose not, Noma agreed, if it's not too difficult to get one. You'd be surprised how easy it is to get a taxi in London once you're dead. Sounds good, Noma said. Shigiri gave a reluctant thumbs up. Great. In the distance, the homeless woman's labored breaths turned into deep rolling snores. Shigiri wondered briefly if she would survive till daylight, or if someone would come for her before whatever illness she was clearly suffering from claimed her. I wonder if we will survive till daylight. Staring into the eye-shaped portal, he distinguished a faint sound like wind blowing steadily behind the blinding radiance, despite the background snoring. It reminded him of slipping from the spirit world to the corporeal back in Lagos, when he was still a working nightmare god, before he had chosen this strange new life and gone freelance with Noma. It had been so long since he'd been to Orun, he found himself missing it, eager to cross to the spirit side again, even though this time he would be in a land of foreign spirits. And then he remembered just how dangerous their task was and how high the risk of being permanently trapped in a foreign spirit place. All the sense of excitement drained from him, and fear started to mount in his mind. You better be ready to open that door like we told you. Don't mess this up, he said to Alistair as he reached into his own mind and seized control of his own fears, weaving them into something more like caution. I won't, the magician responded, looking at Noma as though seeking her final permission or blessing. Shigiri acknowledged that it was she who was owed the favor, and this was the point of no return, so he wanted to be certain. She nodded. See you on the other side, then. Alistair stepped forward confidently into the eye of unnatural brightness. It rippled but remained stable. Shigiri and Noma watched him sink slowly into the shining space between realities until his face was only about half a breath away from the eye of light. He winked at them, and then, just like that, he was gone. A traveler between the two irreconcilable sides of the ancient city. The eye closed, and the light from it disappeared. They were alone again. Neither of them said anything for a second that felt flexible enough to be an hour, as the cool air of early morning London licked at them. The tower of unanswered questions that had built up in Shikidi's mind since they'd left Malaysia suddenly loomed large in the silence as he considered all that had happened and all that could happen to them once they entered the museum. He needed to know. He tried to hold his tongue, but the words came out almost of their own volition. "Noma." She looked up curiously at him.
"Yes?"
"Why were you flirting with Alistair back in the club?" She shook her head as though she were physically rearranging the words of his question in her mind.
"I felt like dancing. I don't know why you got so upset about it. It wasn't a big deal."
He frowned. "We didn't have time for it. And you know you were doing more than just dancing. You were teasing him. I've seen you do it enough times to know. And you were enjoying it. I could feel you projecting."
"Projecting what?"
she shot back.
"I don't know," he admitted, consciously trying not to clench his jaw. "But it was not just sexual energy. That was an emotional state you have never projected around me."
It was Noma's turn to frown then, her lips thinning in annoyance as she folded her hands in front of her.
"Shikidi, we don't have time for this. You said it yourself, we have a job to do."
He knew it was true, but he felt like he couldn't stop.
"You're happy dancing in a club with your ex, or whatever Alistair is to you. You're happy fighting other gods and taking their market share for Olong. You're happy seducing humans and taking their spirits. But you're not happy just being with me, and I want to know why. I have a right to know why."
"Because I don't want to feel like I need anyone," she shouted.
There. She's finally allowed herself to admit it.
"Okay.
I don't like feeling like this. I don't like what my life has become, constantly having to make deals and trade favors and hide in the shadows and run errands for gods I don't like. I don't like having these stupid arguments about how I feel, whether I love you or not, and I don't like the fact that my sister is dead because..."
She stopped before saying it, but he could sense where she was going. The current of her words flowed strong, and he wanted to follow it to some sense of clarity.
"Finish it," he said, lowering his voice. "Because what?"
"Because she made a stupid mistake.
She fell in love with someone who was meant to be a partner, but destroyed everything we had. It destroyed her."
She looked down at the asphalt.
"So you don't want to love me because you think it will compromise you somehow?"
"I don't know," she said. "You are not your sister. Do you really think you will make the same mistake she did if you fall in love? How do you know you're not in love already?"
"I don't know."
She shook her head as she looked back up to meet his gaze.
"I just know that I don't like where we are now. This is not what I wanted when I decided to make you my partner."
She threw up her hands.
"I didn't want to be lonely anymore, that's true. I saw what you could do, and I saw your potential. I knew a partnership could benefit us both, and I wanted that safety. But above all, I wanted freedom, real freedom, and I don't feel like I have that now."
There can be pleasure and pain in knowing someone truly, he thought. Knowing someone so completely that you know how they look when they are about to fall asleep or laugh or cry or orgasm or lie or try to hide something from you. Shikidi felt the pain of her incoming response hit him before he even asked the question.
"Noma, just tell me the truth. Do you love me?"
She wiped at her eyes, like she was clearing them of the emotion she'd let bubble to the surface, looked away and shrugged.
"Why does it matter?"
And at that she started to walk away, crossing the road.
"It is what it is. We are partners in this enterprise, and we need to focus on the task. We can pay our debts and live forever if we play our cards right. We will no longer be beholden to Olonru or any other gods or spirit companies or magicians. We can continue to take as many spirits as we need, when we need them. And no matter how we feel, the truth is that we are good partners, and right now we have no one else but each other. She gave him a wry smile that didn't reach her eyes. Shigiri, we are in the middle of a job that could reward us with vengeance against Shongo. So I don't understand why my feelings matter at all. At all. And I am tired of being interrogated about it. She didn't say it. She didn't say she loves me. In that moment, Shigiri accepted it. Perhaps because he already suspected it deep down. And even if she did, it was possible she would never admit it. She wouldn't allow herself. He suspected that she loved the idea of him, perhaps as much as she loved the memory of her sister. She loved the idea of a partner, someone as beautiful and potentially as powerful as she was, to eat and drink and make love and share eternity with. It was probably why she had spent so much of her powers to remake him, remold him. He could have been any lowly and pathetic minor god she had come across in Lagos with the same desperate look in their eyes and the potential of Olonru's clay written on their skin. Maybe. It could have been anyone, and it just happened to be him. So he accepted it quietly and resolved not to let his emotions overwhelm him again, as they had when he jumped in front of Shango's fist to save her life. Or like they were doing now, overwhelming him in that very moment, causing him to endanger a mission in the hope of hearing those three words from her lips. Fine, he said finally, walking up to her and embracing her tightly from behind. It doesn't matter. As you say, it is what it is. Let's get to work. He only tensed for a second before pushing his foot down with explosive power and launching them into a smooth leap up and over the row of buildings bordering the museum, a weak sliver of summer moon behind them.